spacious skies for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesty.
Well, this is Arthur Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and today our guest is William Federer. And we're going to be talking about, what are we going to be talking about today, Bill?
Oh, the 4th of July and the history of the Declaration of Independence and their faith, and, of course, how we've departed from that so much today.
All right, fine. Well, you pick up the story of the Declaration of Independence, July 4th, and really what has been so much forgotten by so many people, forgotten why America is a unique nation and what the 4th of July really stands for.
Well, I was going to start with May 17 of 1776. The Continental Congress unanimously passed a day of fasting and prayer for the colonies. Just going to read a portion of it. It says, Congress desires that people of all faiths and ranks and degrees are duly impressed with a sense of God's superintending providence to earnestly recommend Friday the 17th of May be observed by the colonies as a day of humiliation, fasting, and prayer. And it ends by saying, through the merits and mediation of Jesus Christ, we may obtain pardon and forgiveness. Now, this was a unanimous declaration by the same men that signed the Declaration of Independence. And so they had very strong faith. You know, it's interesting, they came from the different colonies. And New York was primarily Dutch Reformed, and Virginia was Anglican, and Connecticut was Congregationalist, and Massachusetts was Puritan, Rhode Island Baptist, and Maryland was originally Catholic, and Pennsylvania Quaker. And so when they came to America, they started the colonies, and they went to the Continental Congress, they didn't get along too well. And so Sam Adams, there was a motion made to open with prayer, and some of the Anglicans didn't want to hear a prayer by a Quaker, and the Quakers didn't really want to hear a prayer by the Presbyterians, and Sam Adams stood up and he said, I'm no bigot. I can hear a prayer of any man of piety who at the same time is a patriot of this country. And so they went ahead and opened with prayer. As a matter of fact, every session of the Continental Congress opened with prayer. And Ben Franklin, when they had the Constitutional Convention, he said this. He says, in the beginning of our contest with Great Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayer in this room for divine protection. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. All of us who were engaged in the struggle must have observed frequent instances of a superintending providence in our favor. And these were the men that started our country, starting with a day of fasting and prayer. On June 11th, a committee of five was appointed to draft the Declaration. The committee included John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Livingston, Roger. And the Declaration of Independence in the original draft was introduced into Congress, on June 28th. And in that original draft, it got rid of slavery. Now, that's right. Believe it or not, the first draft of the Declaration of Independence eliminated slavery.
Well, Bill, I'm going to have to interrupt you here. We're going to have to take a break, and we're going to bring some new stations on board here. So we'll repeat just a little bit about what you've said about the background of our Declaration of Independence, and then we'll pick the story up from there. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest today is one of my favorite guests, William Federer, and he's giving us the background of the Declaration of Independence and really, of course, the meaning of the 4th of July. And he was just simply saying that a committee had been established by the Constitutional Convention. The Continental Congress to draft the Declaration. Initially, there were to be five people on it, among whom were Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and Benjamin Franklin and two others. And they were going to draft these Declaration of Independence. And this committee was set up when it was in June, the latter part of June of 1776. Isn't that right, Bill?
Right, June 11th and then June 28th is when they submitted their original draft to the Continental Congress, and the first draft got rid of slavery. Jefferson listed, and the committee listed, 19 reasons why we were rebelling. It says, the King of Great Britain has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, destroyed the lives. He's dissolved legislative assemblies. He's made all the judges subject to his will alone. And then it says that he has incited the merciless Indian savages of the frontier who know no rule of warfare and are undistinguished in destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions of existence. And then it goes on to say this. It says the King of Great Britain has waged cruel war against himself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. This paralysis warfare of the King of Great Britain. He determined to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold, and has suppressed every legislative attempt by the colonies to prohibit or restrain this execrable commerce. So, right there, you know, thrown out slavery. But South Carolina and Georgia refused to sign the Declaration with that in there. And so they caved in and scratched it. The reason being is because slavery was on its way out. It was unprofitable. As a matter of fact, 1807, they prohibited the importation of any more slaves. And it would have gone out on its own had not Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin, which caused the whole cotton industry to just explode.
Hold that thought, because I think it's so important that the Declaration was first written, it outlawed slavery, but they don't teach that today. Hold on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William Federer is our guest, talking about the first draft of the Declaration of Independence. The first draft of the Declaration of Independence, written by Thomas Jefferson and the other four members of the committee. Slavery was outlawed, but of course the two states refused to sign the declaration if that was in there, and so
Georgia refused to sign the declaration with that in there. And the reason this is so important to bring up is because the amount of old misinformation that goes out amongst the African American community that the founders were all a bunch of white slave owners. Well, nothing could be further than the truth. Most of them were not slave owners, just slavery, but the war being such it is, the slave states of the South Carolina and Georgia were the ones that pressured the others, and since they wanted to have a unanimous declaration, they left it out thinking that it was on its way out. About 5,000 blacks on the side of the colonies, and this Addicts was one of the first people killed. He was at the Boston Massacre in 1770. But
there were free blacks at that time too, weren't there?
Right, right. And so that's just a part of history. One interesting was George Wyeth, the Declaration of Independence. He freed his slaves, them, and included them in his will, along with his nephew. Well, his nephew just could slaves with arsenic, then he would. Unfortunately, the coffee that was he intended for just the slaves, and George Wyatt himself fell deathly ill, found out that it was his nephew, struck his nephew from the will before he died, but several of the slaves did die, and his nephew to court, except in court, the testimony of an African American, and so the guy got to go free, and he eventually found his own terrible fate down in some other state, but he was chased out of their state. But anyway, they were against slavery, I wanted to just independence. The independence was voted for on July 2nd. That's when they actually voted for Richard Henry gave the. It finally was voted on July 2nd. Voted on the edited Declaration of Independence. You know, they made all the scratches and they added stuff and took out stuff. And worth only two people signed the Declaration. It was John Hancock. He was the president of the Continental Congress for those first years of our country. Confederation were our central government. And so we had their turn being Congress, and this was John Hancock. He signed the Declaration along with Charles Thompson. It was printed, it was distributed, it was read out loud for the first time on there in Philadelphia. For the 50th anniversary of Philadelphia, 1751, they had a scripture engraved on the Leviticus 25:10 says, "Proclaim liberty unto all the inhabitants thereof," and then they rang it for the Declaration, and then they rang it, every year subsequently in anniversary. But then it was funeral of Supreme Court Justice John Marshall, and that's when it cracked. And July 9th is when the Declaration of Independence was read to George Washington's troops, and it's interesting. First order that Washington his troops after the Declaration of Independence was read to his troops, it was to appoint chaplains to every regiment and have them be paid 33 1/3 dollars per month and have all subordinate officers pay them due respect and soldiers to diligently the order ends, "The general hopes and trusts that every officer and man will endeavor to live and act as becomes a Christian soldier, defending the dearest rights and liberties of his country."
And now, to even today, why they're doing everything they can. West Point and out of the military academy, out of the Air Force, out of the Navy. There are people who hate Christianity because they know if they can destroy the Christian influence in America, they can destroy America. That is not simply the ACLU. There are all sorts of organizations, well-financed organizations, intent upon destruction, of course, or the Help America programs like this. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, and it's so ironic that the first session of the Continental prayer, and then they decided to have a reverend in town open it, and then at the when George Washington, earlier than that, when he was fighting as a colonel in the Virginia militia during the French and Indian War, I read through letters where he wrote to the governor of Virginia, Dinwiddie, what a name. Anyway, and Washington was requesting chaplains for his men. And the governor wrote back and said, "I'll get around to it. Well, we've got somebody if you'll approve him." And then "Are you usurping my authority? It's not your job to appoint a chaplain." And so Washington writes back and says, "Okay, well, you pick one, and we'll pay him." And he says, "You're not supposed to. Our job is to pay him." And he turned up all his trouble over what? A chaplain. And then when Washington has the Declaration ready, he appoints chaplains to every regiment. And then when he finally becomes president, Washington signs the bill both houses of Congress, and that they be paid out of the treasury. And indeed, the U.S. House has been opened by prayer by a Christian chaplain. And in 1860, one of those chaplains invited the first rabbi to say a prayer. His name was Morris Jacob Raphael. And then through the years, other representatives of faiths have been allowed to say a prayer. But and that's the way it is.
Now, because sure they could open the Senate representatives in the United States Senate with a prayer, but we couldn't mention prayer in our schools. Oh, no. They can open, you know, the sessions of the Supreme Court when they come in and they say, you know, God save the United States and this. It's all right to talk about. Why have they targeted our schools? Because they want to destroy the children's faith, because they're working for the next generation to destroy this country. Go ahead.
All chaplains in the military were Christian up until Abraham Lincoln. He was the first president of Jewish chaplains. And so even, you know, Harry S. Truman and his, that all soldiers had to attend the divine services of the Protestant, Catholic, or Jew. It was Judeo-Christian. Franklin Roosevelt said democracy is the birthright of every citizen. And so this is where our country came from. And it's so ironic today that in the prison instructed the chaplains that they are simply to facilitate in their so was a chaplain in a Walsenburg, Colorado prison and would serve there. He had to get a Islamic come and to counsel the Muslim prisoners. Of course, not exactly what they wanted to do is encourage that. He said the final straw was when a guy was a prisoner who was a Wiccan, and he asked for a vial of blood so he could do his religious ceremonies. And he said, that's it, I can't work here anymore. But so the Christian chaplain's hands were tied, even though the whole prison system was started with the idea. It was William Penn. He was a Quaker. He was nonviolent. And the British had violent. They had the stocks where you'd put somebody in it, or you'd whip somebody in the town square, or you'd brand them on the face, or them in a room with a Bible and leave them in there till they become penitent, till they repent, till they become penitent. So they named penitentiary. And so here was the whole of our prison system was based on a biblical idea, and yet now they've tied the hands of those with biblical faith. And again, this is so ironic when you look at the democratic form of government. The laws should reflect the views of the majority. You know, the We the People. Newsweek magazine, 50% of Americans, 52%, several percent, and, atheist. And I thought, you know, here, 1% is forcing its will on. It's a tyranny, and that's what we're seeing happen before our eyes. Anyway, that's all came from the chaplain part of it. Washington, July 9th, to his troops. 15th of 1776, New York finally sent approving the declaration. You think, wait a second, July 15th? New York abstained. It didn't vote the declaration, but it didn't vote for it because the representative of New York did not have permission from their state to vote for it, so they just sat up. New York delegation decided, and so 15th, the Continental Congress engrossed parchment of the Declaration to be prepared. Second is when delegates signed the Declaration of Independence, and then about a half dozen of the remaining next few months. They signed it. Ben Franklin signed saying, we must hang together, or most assuredly we will hang separately. The price on my head has just doubled. And when Sam Adams signed the Declaration, he said, we have this day restored the sovereign to whom he reigns in heaven, and from the rising to the setting.
And of course, they concluded with those. Our life, our fortune, our sacred honor. And they were for America. The question is, a person willing to under God. Well, Bill, go right.
The different people that signed it, he was the youngest, 8 years old when he signed the Declaration. The oldest was Ben Franklin. He was 80 years old. John Witherspoon was a Presbyterian clergyman who taught third Constitution. And Charles Carroll the Declaration of Independence. He happened to be the richest man in America. Carroll that donated the land capital is built on. That was part of Maryland, and it was his farm. This was the what happened to these men that signed. Well, out of the 56, five had traitors. Two lost sons serving in the Continental Army, two sons captured on a British starving ship, had they decided to put a boat in the New York American prisoners on and jump over the side and just sink and freeze to death before he actually fought and died in the war, and stories are moved. Francis Lewis, Declaration, captured his wife through treated her so bad that she died within a few months. John Hart signed the British rushed to his house while he was there at his wife's bedside as she was dying. He had 23 years old. He's got to hide in caves. He's being chased for an entire year. Finally, when it's safe for him to come back home, he finds his barns burned, his grist mills destroyed, his wife had died, his kids were scattered of exhaustion. Listen, if the listener, Mel Gibson, the patriot, has firing their cannons on this great big mansion that has the British General Cornwallis. That house belonged to Thomas Nelson and destroyed, and he was never reimbursed, and Thomas Nelson ended up dying bankrupt. And you know, many, many other ones. And then there's one like Caesar Rodney from New Jersey. He was about to get on a boat to go to England to seek medical treatment. And when word came to him that his replacement for independence, he course he rode 80 miles all night long. The next day, right as they're voting, he stumbles in the door and shouts out that New Jersey votes for independence. He collapses, and shortly thereafter died. Even though today that they probably couldn't have turned it around. He didn't know that, but he was willing to give up his chance for a potential cure for the sake of his country. And just a great encouragement. One of the things I did in my books, and I, of course, put together the country and some encyclopedia quotations, but...
hold that thought right there, please, Bill. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is William Federer, who's really the author of one of his favorite books right here, of See, America's God and Country. And it's really sort of an encyclopedia of the religious history of America, because religion played such an important part in our country, and that is, of course, why the enemies take religion out. Those who will not be ruled. Ruled by the tyrants, and believe me, the tyrants are doing everything they can to destroy any recollection, any remembrance of the Christian foundation of this great country. Well, Bill had just told during the last few minutes, of course, happened to the men who signed the Declaration of Independence. Those of you who would like, you can get the full 1 hour. We do the breaks, and I hope many of you will want to get the full tape. by Radio Liberty. We'll tell you how to get it at the end of the time. But I was saying, Bill, that in your book, Country, pick up your thought there.
Washington, when I read and his orders to his troops, 1774, the British had blockaded the Boston Harbor. Colonies called for a day of fasting and made a short entry in his journal. He said, went to church and fasted to seek divine direction and aid. The battles began when we had the first major battle, Bunker Hill. Fortified Bunker Hill. Actually, a hill that was a little bit higher that was called Breed's Hill, and who commanded there, stations there on Breed's Hill, began unloading. And first, the British were going to bomb before they unloaded their troops, but by some fluke, the British had 6-pound cannons with 12-pound cannonballs, and so the into the cannons, so they couldn't Americans up by blowing them up. The commander decided to charge. He had charge up the Breed's Hill, and the don't shoot until of their eyes, and that's about 15 feet. They shot and they killed a whole bunch of the British, so the British fled back down the hill. They charged up again. And then they shot and they drove them down the hill. And the third time, about 500, but Americans ran out of gunpowder. And so they had to flee. And entries that I made in my book is from of a Amos Farnsworth from Massachusetts militia. And he wrote this in his diary regarding 1775 battle. He says, we within the entrenchment, having fired ammunition and having no reinforcements, were open and obliged to leave. I did not leave the entrenchment until the enemy got in. I then retreated 10 or 15 rods. Then I received a wound in my right arm, the ball a little below my elbow, breaking a little shell bone in my back, taking a piece of skin about as big as a penny. But I got to Cambridge that night. Oh, the goodness of God in preserving my life, although they fell on my right and on my left. Just one of the first of that battle. Anyway, on that exact day, on June 17th of 1775, the Continental decided to put George Washington in as the commander-in-chief of the Continental Army. Immediately packs up and leaves, heads to Boston, to his wife, Martha. He has written a will, and that you know, adequately provided for her, and hopes it meets her desires and so forth. But he's in case of my death, so he had planned in case he shows up there. Allen and the Green Mountain Boys. That forced further up to close to Canada. The Washington to the hill Boston Harbor. He actually put straw on the wheels, tied straw on the wheels so they could wheel it up at night so that the planking of the wheels and know something was up. The next day, the British, the sun comes up, roll full of cannon, and so they evacuate. In the arm, and thereafter, Washington made one of the biggest blunders of Brooklyn Heights.
Right, you're going to have to tell us about the Battle of Brooklyn Heights. Break here, but we have America's found that God was there. Why don't you go ahead and tell us the story of Brooklyn? Of course, every military, one time or another, will make a blunder. What happened?
Troops had Brooklyn Heights, but did not leave himself away. He was backed up against the East River, and he had put at the bottom of the hill his Pennsylvania long, very accurate rifles that could hit. The only problem was 2 minutes to reload these rifles. Troops from their boats, the Americans, British troops were ordered, and they just took off with a sprint, and their bayonets fixed to them. And they got off another round. They couldn't reload fast. Starts charging in there, and the Americans throw up their hands and surrender. Just at the top of the hill, thinking, "Oh my goodness!" The British were about to charge up the hill. They decided to wait because it was, you know, getting close to the afternoon. And so that night, Washington ferry his men across the river to Manhattan Island, and they went all night long in his complete quiet with no lights in darkness. Something began coming up there on the settled over the encampment of the British, and the Americans were able to the sun broke through the fog, and the British charged up the hill, only to find that the and Major Benjamin was Washington's chief of intelligence. He said, as the dawn of the next day, those of us who remained in the trenches became very anxious for safety. When the dawn appeared, there were several regiments on duty. Time a very dense rise off the river. It seemed to settle in a peculiar manner. Evidential occurrence perfectly well here that I could scarcely discern a man at a distance. We tarried there until the fog remained as dense as and so just one of the many examples of the problem. In fact, in one letter,
now hold that thought there, Bill. We'll be right back. Recounts how God interfered. Talking to Bill Federer today, and he told us about the it was that had it not been for an intense fog that came in and surrounded the able to evacuate the almost all but the last minute and George Washington is able to evacuate over to Manhattan Island. Save. This is during the early parts of the war, and Revolutionary War. It had to provide providence there, and really working behind God had to be with him because there was no way they built.
Well, Washington, 4th of 1776, men volunteered for a 6 month. Their farms, soldiers, and they you know, fought the Battle of Brooklyn Heights. Washington had to cross Manhattan Island, cross the Delaware River, took a after battle, looked pretty his crowd dwindled down to 2,000. 20,000 down to 2,000. And these men just for two more weeks, it was over, and the in Philadelphia, just a few miles away, decided that they were going to leave Philadelphia. They said to Washington, was basically, notice, you're in charge of America. So Washington is, well, the British hire the mercenaries. They were the German troops, and they were stationed there at Trenton, and they were just waiting for the river to completely freeze. It was filled full of ice, as it is. As soon as it froze, they were going to march across and capture Philadelphia and end the war. Washington had a plan. On Christmas Day evening of 17, just a week before the remainder was going to go back home, he leads his troops in violence in a blizzard the Delaware River and to attack the German troops at Trenton. And completely factual, but is that a freed black boy boats came across. He stood there holding the horse, a lantern, so that maybe they could see their way across or something, but he froze to death. Anyway, appreciation, the legend of the jockey that, you know, holds out the reins. Nonetheless, fact, Washington men froze early morning hours. They charged and caught the Germans. The Hessians were only trained to fight in a battle with one group loading, another group aiming, and another group shooting, and then they would just keep doing that like a machine gun. But the Americans charged in and were shooting behind trees. Captured 1,000 of them. 10 days later, they captured 3,000 Princeton. And those 10 days were important because France could win this war and began their preparation to enter. But Washington he didn't have the supplies and the reinforcements. The British did finally cross the Delaware. Battles, and Washington did lose Philadelphia in the winter of 1777, occupied the and Washington just there at Valley Forge. I had to put up with this extremely cold. One of the writes, no history at Valley Forge, he said, extent can furnish an instance of such hardships as ours has done. Patience to see men without clothes and without shoes, by which the march almost as often without provisions, marching through frost and snow, a day's march of the enemy, a house or a hut to cover them till they could be built, and submitting to without murmur is a mark of patience and obedience, which in the Congress reported that froze till they became black, and it was necessary to amputate them. Anyway, during this time, the Americans got become a German into a force, and one of the stories during. Want to partake in the war? Would let the Americans quarter. And this was a story. 1777, while the American army was at Valley, by the name of Potts, had occasion to pass through a thicket near the headquarters. Brown Forest, he a voice which, as he advanced, became slowness and circumstance. Dark bower, the bent over branches, apparently formed for the chief of the armies of the United States on his devotion to the ruler of the universe. And he comes home and he flops down in a chair, and his wife says, trouble is the, and he says, if I appear trouble, it is so, because this day I've witnessed something. You know, he tells about Washington praying, and he says, if God's not going to do something like this, he says, I will be mistaken. Thought that a man of war could also be a Christian, but if Washington isn't a Christian. And so that there's been many paintings painted of that experience that Isaac Potts saw. But the next, Washington gives an order to his troops, and this is 1776 May, to the highest glory of patriot, higher glory of Christian. You know, he says, while we are zealous performing the duties of good citizens and soldiers, we certainly be inattentive to the higher duty of religion. And he says this, the signal instances of providential goodness which we have experienced and which have now almost crowned with complete success demand us in a peculiar manner the returns of gratitude and piety to the supreme author of all good. So he keeps talking about another instance was the discovery of Benjamin. Colonel was a very popular general. He led the battle at Saratoga, where America captured five British soldiers. Very important battle. And Benedict Arnold actually disobeyed an order there. He took a couple swigs of whiskey and decided to charge anyway, and some other guys, a bunch of guys got behind him. Caught the British on their flank by surprise and ended up turning the battle. And so he was decided to have a hearing that he should be court-martialed for his wife was a loyalist. Father was a loyalist. And she said, well, those Americans don't appreciate you, and you can imagine you got a wife at home doesn't appreciate you. Anyway, long and short of it, he was put in charge of West Point, and he just decides to betray West Point to the British. And one of the spies that he had met with, he gave him a map of West Point, which the guy folded up and put in the heel of his boot. And dressed as a civilian, the British spy began walking, you know, out of the fort and walking across the no man's land to go back over to where the British decide to stop him and to search him, and they don't find anything. They search him again. Finally, the third time, they just have this inkling. They take off his boot, and they find the map of West Point in there, and they arrest him back into Benedict Arnold's office. Trey, your fort. And Benedict Arnold says, wait right here. And Arnold flees. And that British spy ended up being hung. The Americans hung him. Arnold was not trusted by the British. If he betrayed his own country, he did fight for the British. But Washington writes this, this September 26th of 1780. He says, treason die was yesterday discovered. General Arnold, who commanded at West Point, lost to every sentiment or of public and private opposition. Important post into the hands of the enemy. Such an event must have given the American wound, if not a fatal stab. Happily, the treason had been timely discovered. He says, the providential train of circumstances, convincing proof that the liberties of America are of divine protection. Over and over again, there were instances like that. And another one, after the Battle of Cowley, movie the Patriot with Mel Gibson.
Sure do.
There was the big battle, not the final battle at Yorktown, but the one right before that, where Mel Gibson fights this British commander on the horse, the one that just hates him and, you know, killed his. And the guy's about to kill Mel Gibson, and Mel turns around with his bayonet and sticks it in the guy. Anyway, that was even though the particular instances of it, you know, were created there. But it was a real battle, the Battle of Cowpens. Even though they lost, they decided to chase the Americans. And what happened was, July 1st, it was General Morgan, and it was January 17th, and defeated the British Colonel Tarleton, but then Lord immediately began pursuing the American troops. He decided to at the Catawba River, which the Americans had 2 hours earlier. But since it was evening, they decided to wait. But during the night, a storm began, and the river rose violently, and so it was impassable for days. They finally crossed the river on February 3rd. Wallace's troops almost overtook the Americans again at the Yadkin. But as they watched the Americans get out on the other side, the rain floodwaters caused that river to rise. And then a third time, on February 13th, only a few hours ahead of the British, the Americans crossed the Dan River into Virginia. When the British arrived and the river was again, the British commander, Clinton, the commander in New York, here the Royal Army was again stopped by a which had only just fallen to let the enemy who could not have elsewise eluded was he upon our rear. And again, when Washington talking, he said the hand of providence the course of the war be worse than an infidel that lacks that has not to acknowledge his obligation, but it will be time enough for me to when my present appointment ceases. So he sort of jokes about how, you know, being a preacher, but over and over again, the founders saw that yes, they did everything they could, but if these supernatural instances would have lost, and of course the Battle of Yorktown is the turn, because really, America was losing the war, and the British were moving and consolidating New York, and Cornwallis was marching his men and was basically made the same mistake that Washington did at Brooklyn Heights. Cornwallis brought all his men to Yorktown and were backed up against the Chesapeake Bay there, and were waiting for the British ships to pick them up. Well, and Marquis de Lafayette in France lobbying give the okay. We're down in some British ships there, and the British ships were sent to help Cornwallis. Well, the French ships intervene and have quite a major sea battle. And significant sea battle, but it gets overlooked. But that ships away town, and so Washington was able to bombard Cornwallis again. That in Thomas Nelson, it was in that movie, The Patriot, and finally surrendered 1,000 men, and this was a tremendous loss for the British. The war wasn't over. Paris and the treaty, by the way, begins in the name of the most holy and undivided Trinity. Divine providence to dispose the heart of King George the blah, blah, blah. And it was signed by Franklin Adams and Chief Justice. But it started with the Trinity. It was done today. His victory was, in a sense, bittersweet because his son died at the Battle of York. Aide-de-camp. Influenzas and diseases. And this great victory, he had this personal loss. Lisa was a widow. She had two children. One, Patsy, served Washington in the Army. Died. The widow had two little children as his own. And Martha's grandchildren became George. One of those was named, and he was the father of Robert E. And so Robert E. Lee was a descendant of the Lees there in Virginia, and he was an inheritor of the reputation of George Washington.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a minute. And William Federer. Country. Well, just to wrap up the program for us.
Well, I just feel like it's important to realize the place that faith has played with the founders and the role that they did. One of the points that I bring up, and I can never emphasize it too much, favored denomination. When they got to Congress and the Declaration, nine established denominations. Established meaning mandatory taxes, mandatory membership. I mean, in Virginia, they had fines for you not attending church on Sunday. And he broke from the King of England, who was the head of the Church of England. People began to leave the church, Baptist, Methodist, and Presbyterian churches. Those churches lobbied to say, why should we continue to pay a tax to support a church we don't go to anymore? And so by the time of the Constitution, only six states had established denominations, but one thing they could all agree on, the different churches and the ones with a still had a state monopoly, was they did not want the federal government to establish one Christian denomination for the country. And in terms of, because it says Congress will make no law respecting religion, if you think of a restaurant establishment, Virginia had the Church's Fried Chicken, it was a monopoly restaurant. Lobster. That was the restaurant chain, and some open up, but some didn't. But the only thing they could government to establish one restaurant like a Walmart and put everybody else out of business. And so, government could say Congress a restaurant chain or regulate the restaurant business in the states. Establish one particular Christian for the country, or they cannot tell you what to believe. So, from the original meaning, where at the time of the founding 98% were Christian, to today where 85% of the country is Christian, but they've changed the meaning of that First Amendment to try to get God out of everything. For us to remember that, because here, why did these people die? Why did they go through all this? Why were they paid the ultimate price because they wanted to preserve the freedoms, the first of which was the freedom to worship God according to the Judeo-Christian beliefs that Christians had, and now in a way from domestic enemies. You know, it's just a...
We sure have a lot of domestic enemies right here in the United States. There is today a conspiracy against and tragically all levels of government involved. Bill Federer, thank you very much for being here. Get your website. Hold just a moment. We'll get your website out. Well, our guest, Bill, would you like to go ahead and get your website out so people maybe get your daily minute?
AmericanMinute.com. That's AmericanMinute.com. It's I have a toll-free telephone number. A word. That's 888. WORD, and all the books that I have, and also there's a free daily email call that anybody can sign up at.
And let me suggest you do this again.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye. Bill's book. We do carry America's God and Country. It's available both in book and on CD, and both of them together. And then, of course, we carry his book on George Washington, on Saint Nicholas, and his book on Saint Patrick, and website, Radio. You want to get them from Radio 1-800-27. Founded by another force here at that time. And that's beautifully an award winning DVD which we carry in time. Because there was not only the strong Christian influence at that time as well. And until you want the force of evil here. And if you have not seen The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, I recommend it. It's almost 3 hours in length. And I promise you, watching this DVD, you will not be able to stop. It's available by calling 1-800-448-927. That's 1-800-544-7. And, of course, we have so many other things that's so important to understand. What's going on? My book, Brotherhood of Darkness, I think is an introduction to occult influences in America that were certainly latent when America was formed, but today are predominant, and they are the ones behind the conspiracy against Christianity today. And when you understand there is a conspiracy, and if you doubt that, you're a Christian, just get out of Strong's Concordance and look at the words conspiracy or conspiring, or over 30 references to it. And behind today, behind what's going on in Iraq and the Middle East, behind everything, is this conspiracy. America, indeed, the whole world. Crisis sees that we live in for crisis sees the kill off large numbers of people. And those of you who don't believe, well, all you have to do, of course, is go to Revelation. Read about it there, and I look and behold a pale horse, and the rider upon him was death, and Hades followed close behind. And how are they going to kill them? With wars. And they're going to kill a quarter of the world's population with wars and with hunger. And if you haven't seen my video, The Planned Population Reduction, you need to watch it. They've killed almost 100,000 people. 1973 in third world countries by outlawing DDT. What they're doing, they're allowing the AIDS epidemic to spread. I mean, the sexually transmitted disease today by the CDC, we have 60 million sexually transmitted viral disease, one out of every sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality. Happening by intent. There is organized evil in the world today. Our telephone number 1-800-448-927, 1-800-544-8927. Our website. If you'd like to get a free copy of our latest newsletter, goes into immigration, but who's really behind the immigration movement? Who's financed? It is being financed. You'll be surprised to find out who it is. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our provision and protection.